Before we start today's show, I wanted to quickly thank all of you for riding with us all season long as we enjoyed The Last of Us together. What a show. What a season. Beyond today's discussion, Barrett and I will be back this Thursday on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles to further digest and discuss The Last of Us season finale we just witnessed, driven by hotline calls from our listeners. Subscribe on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles for as little as $5 a month to support our show and enjoy so much more exclusive OCC content ad-free. When you join, you'll immediately gain access to our entire backlog of episodes, including all of our The Last of Us hotline call episodes, as well as bonus coverage of Season 1 of House of the Dragon and Season 2 of The White Lotus, and you'll gain access to our entire companion podcast for HBO's classic crime drama, The Sopranos, friendly to both first-timers and rewatchers. Patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. Also remember, Succession's final season begins March 26th, and we will be here with coverage of Succession, just like we were with The Last of Us, The White Lotus, and House of the Dragon. So stick around, stay subscribed, stay following, and let's watch the final season of Roy family drama unfold together. If you have never checked out my comedy podcast, The Ross Bolin Podcast, give it a shot. We've got over 500 episodes of The Ross Bolin Podcast for you to enjoy, usually very focused on comedy, but with some serious episodes sprinkled in revolving around mental health or personal stuff, like one recently telling the story of the birth of my son. Bolin Media is also home to Formula Bone for all the F1 fans out there. If you're a big fan of F1, a new season has just begun, and Formula Bone, hosted by Jared Borislow, a.k.a. J-Bone, is bringing you all the F1 coverage you need. Subscribe on youtube.com/@FormulaBone and follow @FormulaBone everywhere on social media. Thank you for being here. Thank you for supporting Barrett and I, as well as Bolin Media. We appreciate you so much, especially those of you who support our sponsors by using those dedicated codes and URLs, and even more so, those of you who support us on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. And now, without further ado, our discussion of The Last of Us Season 1 finale. Enjoy. Welcome back for another helping of oysters, clams, and clickers presented by Bolin Media. I am Ross Bolin here today with Mr. Barrett Dudley to digest and discuss episode 9 of HBO's The Last of Us, the finale of season 1 titled Look for the Light.
Now, I did finally see an episode title. Ross, I knew this one before arriving today. And yeah, I don't know if they just like popped it on earlier or if I just made sure to check, but I did see this one.
Kind of a predictable one, I feel like. They hadn't used this phrase yet.
Yeah.
And it ties in to some of what goes down in this episode, which we'll get to.
It also look for the light, right? That's, yeah? Yeah, did I get that correct? Yeah.
Correct.
Also actually ties in to our own current events as we just sprung forward to go on to daylight savings time, where we are looking for all of the light that we can possibly get, and
all of the lights.
And I was just, you know, I'm kind of wondering. I can't help but wonder. Do you think 20 years into the fungus pandemic, do you think they are still falling back and springing forward? Do you think they're still clinging to those to these antiquated ideas of time?
God, I hope not. I hope that's the one positive of the pandemic.
That's the one positive of the pandemic, is that we have eliminated this tomfoolery and stopped springing forward like a bunch of assholes and ruining our circadian rhythms and our biological clocks, because this week sucks ass.
It does. It's not great. It's worse with a newborn.
I can't even. Yeah. Yeah. Because that newborn, guess what? It does not have a concept of clock time.
No. Yet. No. He doesn't care.
All it has is the biorhythms. You know what I mean?
That's right, Barrett.
So,
well, let's dive into this thing. First, I wanted to note that the little intro recap before the episode actually begins. It basically gave us a couple few second snapshot of each of the preceding eight episodes, which I just thought was really nicely handled and really highlighted what a wild journey we have been on this last 9 weeks together.
Yeah, very, very rare to see that too. Like, usually they'll only pull like the very, you know, I mean, I guess what they were saying is that all these episodes have been building to this, you know, they're all relevant, right? But like, it's pretty rare that, you know, when the Succession series finale rolls around, like, they're not going to cut a clip from every single episode of the season.
Yeah, I can't remember ever seeing this before.
So that was kind of cool. I definitely picked up on that.
But after that, Barrett, our season one finale begins with a cold open before the title sequence. We see a very pregnant woman who we come to know as Anna running through the woods and hear screams from what sounds like infected tailing her, right? Now, I thought it was a little weird that when Anna makes it to this clearing and then all the way to this farmhouse, and we get a shot of the open field behind her and the tree line that she has just emerged from, and there's no infected in sight. Like, it just seems like the infected that we inevitably see bust into this room really did one hell of a job tracking her.
Uh-huh.
Like, I didn't think that it would be able to figure out where she was as easily as it did. Like, it just, see, I was like, that was a very skilled infected that was chasing her ass.
Yeah, and you were wondering what she was running from, since we don't see anything?
No, I figured she was running from infected just because of the screeching in the background. But when she made it through the clearing and to the farmhouse and there was nothing in the distance behind her, I was like, well, she's got at least a few hundred yard
right,
you know, head start on this thing. Surely
you thought that she'd shaken it.
I thought so, or that at the very least she'd have more time than she ended up having. But yeah, also it was just one, solitary infected. Because like it just we'll get into it. But yeah, bizarre scene. I couldn't help think of A Quiet Place as I watched this unfold. If anyone listening has seen that movie, surely some of you have. Anyway, Anna enters the farmhouse and says, "It's me." Anyone? Like, she expected people to be there. I think she was expecting Marlene and the Fireflies to have gotten there before her. Then her water breaks as she heads up the stairs, finds her way into a room, barricades the door with a chair, and slumps down to the floor against the back wall, because this wouldn't be an HBO prestige drama without at least one horribly traumatizing birthing scene.
That's
Barrett.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if you've heard this, Ross, but the womb... That's the battlefield.
The woman's battlefield.
That's the woman's
battlefield. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to the House of the Dragon. We hear glass shatter as the infected makes its way through the window into the house, then the terrifyingly fast footsteps as it runs up the stairs and right down the hall, just straight to the door that she barricaded. Again, not clear on the details of how that works with the infected, but this one was effective. It busts down the door. And just immediately attacks her, and it's this whole scene, the way this unfolds, was incredibly scary. But it does like the crazy creepy zombie crawl over to Anna.
Yes.
And they fight. Anna pulls out a very familiar switchblade and kills the thing literally as she gives birth to baby Ellie. And baby Ellie looks like, I know all babies look like babies, but baby Ellie looked shockingly similar to my son when he was born. Like, some of their facial features and stuff, I was like, what the fuck? Me and my wife, like, both looked at each other, like, kind of taken aback. Like, why does that baby have to look so much like our baby?
Well, I thought that baby, especially, like, the very, you know, like, that was, okay, a lot of times you get on TV shows, there's a newborn baby, and they obviously got to use a baby that's, like, a month old or 5 weeks
old. Yeah, it's giant.
It's giant, you're right. This baby looked like a new, freshborn baby.
I would say it was under a few weeks old for sure.
I thought it was animatronic. I was like, that's CGI, right? That's got to be CGI.
Like with the giraffe later?
What's up?
Like with the giraffe later that is clearly.
And then in the after
effects.
The episode, they were like, we were shooting with real babies. And I was like, man, some parents are just like putting their 2 week baby on a set. Like, I mean, I guess, sure. Why
the
not?
Money's right, but... Barrett. Hey, if there's anybody out there, I've got just over 1 month old right now. And for $50,000, that baby can be on your set. And it looks just like this one.
But we had real life babies there be on you know.
I thought it was interesting that
Ellie.
They said babies. Like, there were multiple
right.
babies
oh,
that
of
they
course.
Used.
Well, because you got to imagine that the rules and regulations, you know, for, like, child actors, they can only be on set for, you know, a few hours at a time.
Yeah.
Babies, it's like you get one scene, right? Like, the 10 minutes at a time. That's probably the max. So they need a rotation of infants. But
it just looked like it was the same baby the whole time. Like, for all the baby shots we get of the baby, I feel like they used one baby's takes. And then, like, maybe the ones that we didn't see its face,
right,
there were other babies
right.
being rotated in.
Yes, I think so. I think
this also reminded me of the rehearsal.
Yes.
If you watch the rehearsal on HBO, like,
yeah.
rotating
yeah.
in new babies to make it age or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, unfortunately, as we are relieved to find Anna has successfully given birth mid-infected attack, we also discover she has been bitten on the thigh. So she takes her switchblade and quickly cuts the umbilical cord, which is actually something I got to do just over a month ago in a less stressful situation, thankfully. Mm-hmm. And then Anna...
Without a cordyceps virus infiltrating the... making its way through the umbilical cord.
Yeah, honestly,
well.
The first yeah. time I watched it again this morning to do our outline, the first time I watched it last night, it didn't occur to me that she was like, oh shit, I've got to cut this really quick because I'm infected and it's yeah. going to go through the umbilical cord and infect the child.
Right, right, shared blood.
Yeah. But she takes out the switchblade, cuts the thing, and then tells baby Ellie, I got you, it's okay, just like Joel did last week. And then the opening title sequence rolls. I thought it was interesting their decision to... I thought that was going to be it. I was like, wow, we got baby right. Ellie's birth, and now they're going to yeah. flash forward back to where we are in the present with Joel. But no, after the opening title sequence, we end up with Marlene.
Yeah.
And a few of her guys, and they make their way into the farmhouse, head up the stairs to find Anna singing to baby Ellie. When Marlene comes into the room, Anna has her knife to her own neck, like she's ready. I guess she was like, all right, if I feel even a little tingly... I'm just going to go ahead and take myself out, right?
Right.
But she was going to wait as long as she possibly could to see if Marlene would get there. This was clearly some kind of a meetup they were going to be having here. My impression was that they both escaped from some QZ with this being like their spot that they were going to hit together. But
yeah.
don't know why they would let the pregnant lady run off by herself. Don't understand why she wouldn't be the one accompanied by armed men instead of Marlene. But that's neither here nor there, I suppose. Marlene says we were a little delayed getting out of the zone, like of the quarantine zone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Anna says baby Ellie needs to be fed, but she didn't want to nurse her because of the infection, obviously. Like, that's another thing, you know, I learned having a kid recently
mm-hmm.
that they have to eat pretty quickly. Like, once you've cut that cord, they're no longer getting sustenance.
Nutrients.
They need some of that milk or formula, as it were. So... she tells Marlene she cut the cord, Anna does, that she cut the cord before she was bit,
right.
she says.
Yeah.
Which just from a, you know, you can tell Marlene was kind of like, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right? Like, suspicious of that. And then she insists, like, she says it again,
yeah.
before.
Yeah. But what we now know as the audience is that this was vaccination, basically, through the umbilical cord. She got just enough of that cordyceps
right.
virus in her system.
To confuse it.
And that, yeah. And that is why she is, that's the, you know, that's how she was given the immunity.
Yeah. And obviously she's lying to Marlene. And really the question becomes, is any child that is born to an infected mother, and if you cut the umbilical cord at just the right time,
right,
like
right.
somehow immune, like Ellie? Is it possible there are more Ellies? Like, Joel even tells her the lie later in the episode.
That,
like,
there are dozens of
them. There's
yeah.
a whole bunch of you, it yeah. turns out.
Groups of which there are dozens. People like Ellie, who are immune.
Dozens of them.
And never nudes. There are dozens of both of those groups of people.
Dozens!
but yeah, like, yeah, and I thought it was interesting because we had talked last week about the idea that you could get bit and then just, like, immediately amputate a limb.
Right.
And potentially save yourself. And I gotta say, based on the science that we saw here, kind of seems like that might work.
Would be similar, right?
Right?
Like,
because
you'd only get a little bit
yeah,
through
because
the bloodstream.
Cordyceps is making its way through the bloodstream, through the umbilical cord, to the baby, to the bloodstream in the brain and all that. Like, it is traveling through that flow, basically. And so it seems like, now, obviously, like, I pitched this idea to Laura, and she was like, well, you'd have to be, like, in the perfect setting, and then you have to, like, be able to, like, cauterize and treat the wound that
sure.
you make, and, like, You got to do it immediately. So you have to have the right tool. So obviously, like, yes, that is all, like, the moment has to be right. You have to be prepared that if you get bit on a limb or an extremity or a hand or whatever, to, like, you got to have that cleaver ready to go, and then somebody's got to be able to treat that wound. So yeah, it's a far-fetched idea, but point being, I think we're on to something.
Yeah, it does seem unlikely that this particular birthing situation would be replicated elsewhere.
Yeah.
But maybe longer term, the cure can be they get one infected, they put it in a cage, you walk by, you let it bite you on the finger, and then you chop off that finger. And that's it, right?
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
You're good.
Yeah.
Anna tells Marlene, I want you to take her with you to Boston, find somewhere to bring her up, and make sure that she's safe. And she also tells Marlene she wants her to have that switchblade, which is an interesting gift to give to a newborn baby.
It's all she's got, man.
Yeah.
You know, she's got a gift or something.
Ashley Johnson, by the way, is who is playing Ellie's mom in this episode, and she actually played Ellie herself in the video game. So both of these scenes are very cool just because it's Merle Dandridge who plays Marlene both on screen and in the video game, working with Ashley Johnson who played Ellie in the video game. Just cool stuff, folks.
It was really cool.
Appreciate the coolness.
And I do, and I just thought it was great that they included all of these like original game actors in the world, in the TV world. And they all came to play, which is what I thought was great too. Like they were all great in
there. Yeah, nobody stood out as like, oh, this shitty video game actor here. Yeah. It makes me wonder if Neil Druckmann, when he was negotiating this deal with HBO, if he was like, and you need to include X amount of, like, these are the people from the video game that I want to be involved in one way or another, right?
Maybe so.
So Anna tells Marlene that the baby's name is Ellie, which, honestly, until she said the name a little bit before that, I was like, I wasn't really putting two and two together because they had showed flashes of this pregnant woman in the trailer for this episode and used images of her, like, on Twitter and Instagram, advertising the episode. And I thought it was going to be a completely different scenario where, like, Joel and Ellie stumble across a pregnant woman, try to save her somehow. She has the baby but dies, and then they're stuck with a baby. And then it's Joel and Ellie and a baby. Like, that's what I thought was going to happen.
And
so
that season two is Joel, Ellie, and a baby.
Yeah. It's an odd couple, you know?
Yeah.
They got to raise this kid.
They get in some real hijinks, those three, you know?
It becomes a romantic comedy of sorts. Anna tells, we have to watch Marlene take baby Ellie. Oh, we find out they've known each other their whole lives. Anna and Marlene. They must have been childhood best friends, grew up together, survived however many years of this pandemic have occurred so far together. And Marlene has to take baby Ellie, hand her to one of her men, tell him to cover her ears, then walk back into the room and execute Anna. So, Barrett, on the whole, what did you think of this flashback to Ellie's origins?
It's good, man. I thought it was a good opening scene. Good information dump.
Intense stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whenever they show a baby being born on a TV show or a movie, it's always miraculously clean.
Yeah, less gunk on it.
It doesn't have all the blood and the goo.
I feel like that is something that I think House of the Dragon went for, right? Because those babies come out
pretty rough.
Pretty gunky.
Yeah.
Pretty bloody.
Yeah, they got to wipe them off real good when they pop out of there, man. That's another thing I learned recently.
Yeah.
Got all kinds of stuff.
I also thought it was important, right? Because it was a little bit expository, but we learned important things, like the fact that Merle Dandridge, what is the character's name? It's just like
Marlene.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Like Marlene and Ellie's mom, like, go back forever. Like, this is, and she saves this baby here and then has to, like, mercy kill her mom. And just, like, there's so much history, right? So, like, later in the episode, when we get to decision-making that is at hand, we're operating with that knowledge as well, right? Like, this is not so when Marlene makes the decision that she thinks she has to make, it's with all of this having already played out. And so it's not an easy decision for her to make, right?
Right.
And we'll get there, but.
Yeah, it's also a call. I mean, two pieces of this episode really filled in some blanks that you and I were questioning whether or not they would give us related to Ellie and Riley in the mall and how that whole thing ended. And we were questioning, like, why would Marlene and her people not just, like, immediately execute this kid?
Yeah.
Well, she swore to her mother that she would protect her, for one, but also she was born under mysterious circumstances that would kind of give her a little bit more pause to see, like, now, let's wait and see what happens. You know what I mean? Or, like, if she wasn't turned and could point to the scar, like, look, it's not spreading. I'm good. Please don't shoot. Marlene would be a little bit more likely to listen.
She's got some inkling of what may have went down.
Yeah. And then also when Ellie explains to Joel her whole situation with Riley, which we will get to. So next we are in the present with Ellie sitting on the back of a pickup truck. She's clearly still reeling from the experience of being assaulted by and then having to murder David back in Silver Lake. So Joel is like trying to cheer her up. He's like, look, I found some beefaroni Chef Boyardee, which is kind of, it's the first of several callbacks to previous relationship building moments between Joel and Ellie that we will experience during this episode. Mm-hmm. You'll remember that they shared some Chef Boyardee product, aged 20 years,
yes,
the good
yes,
shit Barrett,
right.
Around a campfire in episode like 3, I think. Not 3, that's Frank and Bill, but one of the early episodes.
Yeah.
So Joel also has a boggle word game that he found and he's just like, look, fun stuff. It's not all that bad, is it? He tells her that there's a hospital that way, which might be the one that they're looking for. And of note, he also asks her to hold his gun while he gets his pack situated, which is just not something he would have done 7 episodes ago, right? He's like awkwardly chipper here, Joel. Like a little bit on the nose that he's trying to cheer her up.
What it reminded me of is when you're in a fight with your significant other.
Yeah.
And then you move on from the fight, but they don't. And so, and you're like a little too awkwardly, like trying to move past it by being like overly normal.
Hey, we could watch that movie you love tonight. That one that I never want to watch. You want to watch that movie tonight, Barrett?
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you can't help, but like, it feels weird because you know you're kind of trying to force it and that person's not over, you know, whatever the issue was.
Yeah,
that's what this reminded me of, is like Ellie is just completely still all the way in her head about what has gone on, you know, the last little while. And what I thought was extra interesting about that, right, is there's clearly been a passage of time as well. They have been on the road for a while.
They've covered some ground here,
because that they're in Salt Lake City or close to Salt Lake City. We see the road signs. That's Utah, baby. That's a cold place still in the winter.
Yeah.
So if it was snowy and stormy and blizzardy in Colorado, like, and now they're in Salt Lake City and we see all the greenery and it looks warm. They don't have their big jackets on anymore.
Right.
Like, it's basically gone from, like, it feels like it's gone from, I don't know, February to April or something like that, right?
Like maybe a few months,
it's been a few months of traveling, it would seem. And so it's I think that also was trying to communicate that it's been a while, man. And Ellie has been, like, kind of
in the dark.
Not herself and in a dark place for a long time here. So this is, you know, Joel, it kind of felt maybe a little bit weird because of we just watched what happened.
Yeah.
But I think what you're supposed to kind of infer there is that, like, they've been traveling now for a few months, and Joel is, like, really, like, he's all in now in this relationship and is really trying to get something out of her, to get some of that, you know, her good nature and her, you know, her attentiveness back in play.
Yeah, if she's in the dark, he's trying to get her
to the light.
To look for the light.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, hey, crazy, but I found a smashed up guitar in that RV back there. Maybe I could get a guitar and teach you how to play. And she's so zoned out, like disassociated from all that she's endured, that she doesn't even hear him a couple different times in this conversation.
Yep.
And then he's like, did you hear me? And she's like, oh, yeah. No, that'd be great. That'd be great. So we head into Salt Lake City, and one of my favorite moments probably of the whole season happens when Joel says, okay, so this is what I'm thinking. And she cuts him off, cut through that building to get around that stuff, find a skyscraper, go up and look around. And he's like, actually, this time I was thinking we blast our way through that rubble. I found some dynamite in that RV back there. She's like, really? He's like, no. So we're going to cut through that building, find a skyscraper, go up and look around. But again, I think that was also a call to, like, they've been doing this so much together, right? Yeah. Like, we've only seen that happen once, I think, and it was back in the Sam and Henry episode. But clearly they've done it a couple times on their way to Utah. So they have to find their way up to a higher floor, and Joel has to boost Ellie up so she can drop a ladder down, which is something you do over and over in the video game, both with Tess and then with Ellie.
I remember that.
It's the way you have to get around everywhere. It'll like stick you in a room and you're like, how the fuck do I get out of this room?
Yeah.
And you have to end up like moving some furniture to boost her up onto the thing so she can climb to the next floor and drop a ladder down for you. Just another cool call to the video games. But after getting a boost, Ellie gets distracted by something she sees and just runs off. And finally, we have the famous giraffe scene, Barrett, where I guess the giraffe ended up playing into the title of the episode as well, where it's like a symbol that no matter how dark things get, there's still light in the world, right? There's still beauty, and the giraffe moment reminds Joel and Ellie of that while giving us a glimpse of Ellie before all the trauma and pain, right? Like hearing her laugh again, hearing her giggle again, and it was well done.
Yeah.
It was well done. There was moment at points I was like, is it real? Is it a real giraffe? Like when she was feeding it? I don't know how they do that. How they do that?
Yeah.
I don't know how. They make it look so fucking real. Like, how is the greenery being sucked away from her hand by a giraffe that's not really there with its long-ass creepy
tongue?
They
get a guy, and he's up on, like, a little crane, and he's got, like, just, like, a little, like, vacuum thing.
Sucks it right out of her hand.
Sucks it out of her hand. Yeah,
and then that gets green screened
up. And he's wearing, like, the full green man suit, like, in Always Sunny. Yeah. Yeah, it was cool. I liked the scene a lot. I'm still... Some of the animal moments I am finding strange because I'm like, all right, animals are just immune to this thing, I guess. They are taking, like, they're taking the planet back over because for whatever reason, I know people have written in and talked about, like, body temperatures and all that stuff, but, like, they just, the infected aren't going around biting giraffes, I guess.
Maybe they don't make good hosts. I don't know. But yeah, we've had the monkey scenes. We've got the giraffes now.
I think somebody mentioned that like the animals don't eat like grains like we do, so that they were. But
yeah, but that would have just avoided the initial outbreak, right?
Right. That was my thinking. Like, you know. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. As we just kind of like bring up the little things that threw up flags in our brains. I am just overall curious about the animal world, animal kingdom during all of this pandemic stuff.
It seems like the message from the animals and from this giraffe scene in particular is like, it's just back to the classic, nature is healing, we are the virus, right? Like, it reminded me a little bit of like Jurassic Park, like these big-ass dinosaurs, because we end up seeing multiple here. Like, that one walks off, Ellie chases it, Joel follows her to that roof where they're looking over like a field of giraffes.
Right, yeah, yeah. Do you get the sense at all, and maybe the TV show was playing with this more than the video game does, but like obviously the TV show did not rely a whole lot on infected, which I thought was a choice that I really liked. It's just something, it was like a piece of it that we knew was out there. We knew that was the initial outbreak. This is what it had caused. This is a hazard and a danger that exists. But it was almost like they pulled away from it so much in the back half of the season, basically, you almost got the feeling that it like wasn't that much of a threat anymore.
I think it's just supposed to be kind of a looming threat in the background always. Like when they would travel through these little areas, you know, even through the building to get to the giraffe view, I was always kind of in the back of my mind, it could be any second now one of these things pops out, right? Yep. So it just like inserts that fear and that constant anxiety into the experience.
Sure.
But I mean, I'm with you. I appreciated that they weren't as focused on it as I thought they would be.
Right.
It does kind of become background noise for you, the whole infected thing and like having to deal. Earlier in the season, I was so focused on like, we got runners and stalkers and clickers and bloaters and like, that's going to be a real, like we're going to see like an army of these fuckers. Like that never happens. And it's also interesting just because I wonder how that plays into season two.
Right. Like, definitely.
What are we, is it just going to be background noise for like, and there'll be specific instances where the infected come into play, or will the infected present a larger problem? But we can talk about it at the end of the pod. So when they're overlooking this field full of giraffes, they have another callback conversation. Joel says, so is it everything you hoped for? And Ellie says, got its ups and downs, but you can't deny that view. And it's here on the roof that Joel offers Ellie the chance to go back to Tommy's and forget about the whole damn thing. It's like he's not sure he wants to go through with this. He says something like, look, I'm not saying there's going to be bad shit out there, but everything we've done, there ends up being bad shit out there.
Yeah.
Maybe we just call it quits, head back to Jackson, live a nice life with the communists. You know?
And I think that this is a little bit of foreshadowing for the audience, but also I think insight into that both of them know, even on the approach here, that like whatever is going to happen at this hospital is a complete unknown.
Yeah, it's a crapshoot.
It's a total crapshoot. And I think they both kind of have like, you know, the thought is at least looming in the back of their minds that it might not be as simple as just like drawing a vial of blood from Ellie.
Right.
You know, and I think that also helps explain Ellie's mood on the approach as well. Like, not only is it dealing with the fallout from everything that she's been through, but now she's also got the apprehension of like, I've got no idea what I'm walking into. I don't know what this
means. What are these people going to do to me?
What they're going to do to me? What the testing is going to be like? Is it going to be torturous? Is it going to, you know? Who knows? So that I liked the scene because it's like the understanding between them that whatever is approaching, whatever they are approaching, is potentially not entirely benevolent.
Yeah, and even with that sort of insight that it does appear she has on some level, she says, after what we've been through, everything I've done, it can't be for nothing. I know you mean well. I know you want to protect me. You have. And when we're done here, we'll go wherever you want. Tommy's, Sheep Ranch, the moon. I'll follow you anywhere you go, but there's no halfway with this. We finish what we started, which ends up being the most important statement of the entire episode. And I just had no idea how much that conversation was queuing us up for the rest of this thing. In hindsight, it was very brutal. So Joel and Ellie make their way through an army emergency medical camp, and we find out not only that Joel was in one of these emergency medical camps, but also that the second day after the outbreak, Joel was in fact the guy who shot and missed, right? He attempted suicide, but something made him flinch, like he was supposed to be there, Barrett, like he was supposed to stick around, like he had some other purpose to fulfill, Barrett, like destiny, you know, had something else in store for him, Barrett. Yeah. He tells Ellie all of this in an effort to get her to realize that she will heal from what she has experienced, right? And that there is some coming back from all of this trauma, I think, was the general goal of his story. I noticed that Ellie and Joel sort of trade truths about each other as like a currency in this episode. A big one at the very end that we'll touch on.
Well, and this is also I believe this is the scene when he finally shares the details of that story with her, where she says that, you know, time heals all wounds or something like that.
Yeah.
And he says it wasn't time. It wasn't time that did it. Basically,
it was her, Barrett.
Confirming that this recent, he has accepted fully Ellie as like this, you know, surrogate daughter, basically, and found very, very meaningful purpose for himself in guarding and protecting and being a father-like figure for her.
Yeah, and as he tells her, like, you find something else to keep you going, right?
Yeah,
like, things will break you.
Worth fighting. Keep new thing. You find something else. Like, even, sorry, I'm stumbling over these words, but what does he say? He's like, even at your very lowest, you keep on going. You just force yourself through it, and eventually you find something else worth continuing to fight for.
So they get going again, and Joel tells Ellie that he's in the mood for shitty puns, still trying to get her to kind of come out of her shell, right? So she busts out Will Livingston's no pun intended and drops, people are making apocalypse jokes like there's no tomorrow. Too soon? And Joel says, no, it's topical. So as they walk, we see what looks like military guys like sneaking up on them from behind. I was like, oh God. They throw a flashbang at their feet, and then Joel gets knocked out with the butt of a gun. And the way that he got knocked out here, it just like reminded me, people throw this around in Hollywood all willy-nilly, just like whacking each other in the head with guns. Like, that would fucking crack your skull open and kill you, dude. Yeah. Like, it's possible that it would, right? It'd be very damaging.
It is probably the thing in like action movies and in Hollywood in general. It's like, I think the biggest just like fake piece of violence.
Yeah, they overuse it.
They overuse it. I don't think, even with like pistol whipping people.
No, it would fuck you up.
That like, yes, really badly. You could definitely kill somebody.
She's with like all, some brain damage.
With all like, these like pistol whips and butt of the gun to the skull. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
But in TV and movie world, it just knocks you unconscious for a little while. Yes, and then you have a headache.
Exactly.
And that's it.
Don't
even need stitches. Just got hit as hard as you could with a fucking AR butt, but whatever.
Yeah.
So Joel wakes up in a hospital with Marlene saying, "Welcome to the Fireflies." And I have a lot to say about Marlene here. So she tells Joel, first of all, like, hey, she doesn't say sorry, but she's like, the patrol didn't know it was you. Who you and Ellie were, and
they whacked you a little too hard, didn't they?
Yeah. Take it easy. We know your head hurts. Then tells Joel that Ellie is fine, that there's not even a scratch on her, and goes on to give him like kind of backhanded credit for getting her there. When she herself, Marlene, had five men protecting her, just her, and she still almost died and lost half her crew on the way to Salt Lake City, as she puts it. And she says, "You are the only person I never, or the one person I never wanted to be in debt to. But I owe you. We all owe you." So Joel is like, yeah, just take me to her. And Marlene says she can't because Ellie is being prepped for surgery. And Marlene says, our doctor, he thinks that the cordyceps in Ellie has grown with her since birth. It produces a kind of chemical messenger. It makes normal cordyceps think that she's cordyceps. It's why she's immune. He's going to remove it from her, multiply the cells in a lab, produce those chemical messengers, and then we can give it to everyone. He thinks it could be a cure, Joel. And Joel says, cordyceps grows inside the brain. And Marlene tells Joel that they didn't tell Ellie. They didn't cause her any fear. There won't be any pain. And Joel starts to lose his shit because, like, the implication is that Ellie is going to die, right, Barrett?
Oh, 100%.
Like, they're going to take out, like, her whole brain?
Take her brain out, yeah.
Yeah, so brain surgery, the whole brain coming out. I mean, I guess the other implication could have been, like, it's very possible she won't survive the surgery, but
the implication to me was that they got to take out her brain.
They have to sacrifice her.
Yes.
For the chance to make this, which I think Marlene horribly mishandled this entire situation. Like, obviously, that's easy to say with the hindsight of what goes on, but I wanted to rip my hair out of my head watching this unfold. Like, this man got this little girl all the way across the country just so you could kill her without giving her a choice, mind you. And you thought Joel, who you just said is like the one person you never wanted to be indebted to because you clearly know something about his violent ways, you thought he was just going to take this and be like, yeah, that's cool with me. Totally understand. Hey, you got to do what you got to do. I didn't get to say goodbye. You didn't give her a choice. But no, I'll just go along with all this. Everything's cool.
I think that here's the thing. Early in the season, and they show us a couple of these scenes in the, you know, previously on, basically. But Joel is doing his best to keep Ellie at an arm's length.
Yeah.
He calls her cargo. He says this is a mission. He just wants to find his brother, right? Like, I think that, you know, I think maybe Marlene has bad intel, or at least a reason to think that Joel has completed the mission because he wants all this other stuff. I mean, don't forget, like, I realize it's been months basically now, but like the first thing that he wanted was just like the battery for the truck.
Right.
Right. So there might be an idea in Marlene's head now that like they can just buy Joel off with whatever else he wants, and that he has transported the cargo and it's not going to go further than that.
But she doesn't even offer him anything. And it, like, from a strategically, I don't understand how this unfolded, because it's like, all right, they were in the University of Eastern Colorado or whatever. They bailed and came here. All they left was one map that they would, hope that Joel and Ellie would, like, stumble upon. And, like, they were just set up here with a fucking brain surgeon just in case maybe he made it there with the little girl. And even with all of that in the back of her mind, she was like, I'm not going to give this guy shit to be happy about. I'm not going to let him say goodbye. I'm not going to give the little girl a choice. Like, she probably would have volunteered to do the surgery and save humanity. That's the most fucked up part about all of this. Like, I felt like Ellie's speech to Joel earlier in the episode was basically like, look, I am so damaged by all of this. I want my chance to have purpose and positivity for not only my life, but for potentially others, right?
Totally.
And I think that word, potentially, is a major problem, because nothing here is promised. And I don't think Joel can see past the fact that, like, they might kill Ellie in the process, or that, like, it might not even work. They're going to kill her, and then it's maybe, it's for a maybe. Like, maybe they can make a cure out of this. Maybe it will happen. And he can't abide by that. I think it's one of the reasons he does what he does, because there's no promise. There's no guarantee. And there's no bedside manner. Marlene's just like, thanks a lot. Fuck you. Get out.
Okay. I hear your take, and I mostly agree with Marlene's poor handling of the Joel of it all.
Total idiot.
The rest of what you're getting into is why people love the finale of this video game, why this episode is so powerful, because it is immediately divisive. People take all sorts of sides, largely split into two camps.
Yeah.
And all of the gray moral questions come into play here, and it's what makes this so fun to think about and discuss, and fun and also, you know, terrifying and horrifying and awful. But like, you know, you asked a good question, right? With not asking Ellie, you didn't give her the choice, and that is, it's one of the main things that lets a little bit of like, or a lot of bit of like, siding with Joel here into your head, because they didn't give Ellie a choice. They're just gonna kill her. You know, they went under false pretenses. They lied to her. She does not know this is happening, and that's not fair. I totally agree with you. If they had given her the choice, it seems like she probably would have sacrificed herself.
Yeah.
But now put yourself in Marlene's shoes. This has been 20 fucking years, and this is the one person, this is the one chance that you've had in two decades to possibly save humanity. You're gonna give that a choice? You're gonna let somebody maybe not make the decision there?
Right.
Because if she doesn't, then you're fucked.
I mean, that's the oxymoron of it, though, is it's like you're removing humanity from the equation by not giving her the option as a human. And yeah. And it's for saving something that at this point might be so damaged and broken that there is no coming back from anyway. Right? Like, that becomes the sort of moral conundrum that these people find themselves in. And I totally see both sides of the argument. Like, I'm not all in on like, oh, yeah, Joel should have totally murdered everybody and taken her out of there. But like, the way Marlene set this up, she certainly almost pushed him in the direction of like, of what he does. So let's get into what he does. So first he says, please, you don't understand. And she says, I do. I was there when she was born, Joel. I promised her mother that I would save her child. I promised her. So I do understand. I'm the only one who understands. And it's like, then lady, why the fuck didn't you handle this more delicately? But she says, I'm sorry. I have no other choice. And Joel replies, I do. And that's when I realized he was going to kill everybody in the hospital.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah.
But Marlene orders her soldiers to walk him to the highway and leave him there with his pack and to give him Ellie's switchblade. So none of the stuff we talked about before about like, you finish this mission and we're going to give you a battery or like whatever weaponry, like, nope, just take him out to the highway, drop him there, give him a switchblade, tell him to fuck off. And if he does anything, you know, out of the ordinary, if he tries anything, shoot him. And that's that. So these two jackasses start walking Joel out of the hospital way too aggressively. Again, absolutely zero bedside manner, considering the situation. He just potentially saved humanity by getting this little girl here. And you're like pushing him in the back. You just knocked him out cold with a butt of your gun. He's been awake for 5 minutes and gotten the worst news he's gotten since his daughter's death.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on.
At the very least, I mean, you know, if you want to get into the whole like Bond villainy thing, like you explain what you're going to do before you do it. Why don't you just like hit the fucking button, you moron? Right?
Yeah.
Like handcuff this guy to, you know, a foam pole.
For the love
and
of God.
Get the surgery done. Right.
Yes.
And then let him, you know.
Then let him freak out and murder all of you. Yeah, no, what the fuck? But it's like they were begging Joel to try something. Like he stops and they're like pushing him in the back. I was just like, you're all going to die. This is so silly.
Yeah.
So then Joel goes on a 30 kill streak, just like full Jason Bourne or John Wick, depending on your preference. He kills his two captors, grabs Ellie's switchblade, makes his way back up the stairs, and they apply this like crazy, eerie, like music in the background.
Yeah, it's cello.
Very solemn. Yeah. And it sort of fades out the foreground music of the gunshots and the people screaming and whatnot, and you watch him pace around the hospital calmly executing people. Like one guy even puts down his gun and surrenders. Joel still executes him. He kills one guy with Ellie's switchblade, like picks up that dude's gun because he's out of ammo in the other one. And you mentioned Bond villains. Like these people are all like James Bond henchman level trash at shooting or something, because he takes out like 30 people, man. Like,
yeah. So I saw, leave it to the publication Slate to just like drop the most absurd clickbait, like extremist view. You know, we're going to go all the way to, you know, to a certain side. I usually don't read stuff before I come in here, but the headline was like, Last of Us finale makes a disastrous mistake. And I was like, well,
okay,
fine.
Have
you
to click
me.
On that.
I'm going to click it with your clickbait bullshit. Anyway, the point was the choice that they didn't like was making this so easy for Joel. That he does go through with, like, basically with full video game armor. Everything is super easy. He does not take a hit. He does not take a blow. It's all, but I actually, I was watching and I thought that the choice was a good one. The Slate article also, like, went as far as to say that the somber cello music is supposed to, like, push you towards leaning on the side of Joel. I did not read that at all.
I thought it was the opposite.
I just thought it was like, The slow, somber music was just enhanced the devastating thing that he was doing, whichever side, regardless of whether you agree with him.
What he was having to do was still brutal no matter what.
Was absolutely awful. This dude is murdering a bunch of people that are just trying to save humanity, right? Like, this is, even if you, at the end of the day, even if you agree with Joel going to save Ellie here, the way that he goes about it is absolutely cold-blooded.
Yeah.
And so I thought that the way that, you know, and they have the great, like, shots of just his feet just, like, moving and
really slowly,
really
too, yeah.
Slowly,
calmly.
And, like, very calmly. And so I just thought it accentuated this idea that, like, he was essentially seeing red at this point.
Yeah.
And he was not going to be stopped. And he was not going to show any mercy or make any decisions that could help us get on his side.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, no, he was completely locked in on one thing.
Locked in on one thing and kind of making, you know, a decision that he is telling himself is for protecting Ellie, but is really largely for himself.
That's the biggest argument for anti-Joel people, not antibiotics. Anti-Joel people is that he acted out of selfishness here. That basically he's replacing Ellie... I mean, he's replacing Sarah, his daughter, with Ellie, and this is all just about making him feel better, and that it's, you know what I mean, just about him.
Yeah.
So he makes it to the pediatric wing of the hospital, into the room where they're prepping Ellie for surgery, and I thought maybe he would turn the corner here and, like, change his mind and just watch the surgery unfold, but no, he busts in and executes the brain surgeon pretty much immediately.
Yeah.
The guy, like, picks up a scalpel. He's like, I won't let you do it. Immediate headshot, just out. He forces the nurses to unhook her, and he does let the nurses live. I
thought that was an interesting choice. Yeah, I did. I thought at this point he was just going to kill them too.
Kill everybody, right? But he walks out with Ellie's unconscious body. I think the nurses may have been left alive because someone has to know he did this. Mm. Like, somehow this has to tie into season two, I feel like, eventually, right? Maybe, I don't know. But yeah, Joel takes a somehow fully operational elevator down to the parking garage where, of course, Marlene is waiting for some reason. What the fuck is she doing in there?
I mean, probably heard all the gunshots and
she just,
you know,
bailed
and hubbub and went and was like, I got to get out of here, but I'm going to be the last line of defense.
Yeah, I guess. She tells Joel he can't keep Ellie safe forever. And she asks him, after you die and she leaves, how long before she's torn apart by infected or murdered by raiders because she lives in a broken world that you could have saved, right? Which is whole part of the argument too. Joel says it's not for you to decide. Marlene says it's not for you to decide either. And she asks Joel, so what would she decide, huh? Because I think she'd want to do what's right. And it's like, bitch, then why didn't you give her the fucking option? Why? If you believed she would have made the right choice, why didn't you let her do that? It would have changed this whole thing. Get her in a separate room than Joel. Get a microphone in there. Ask her, do you want us to do this? She goes, yep, I want you to do this. And then Joel's in the other room having to listen, and he goes, damn, I guess I better let him do it. Like, anything. Just try. It just could have been handled so differently. But Marlene says, it's not too late. Even now, after what you've done, we can still find a way. And I love the way they did this. She finishes that sentence and we flash to Joel driving down the road as Ellie regains consciousness in the back seat. And for a moment, I was like, oh my God, Marlene's going to kill Joel. And this is some kind of, like, heaven scene where he's, like, imagining himself in the car with Ellie. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I thought I could not get a read on what was happening here. And he tells Ellie that the Fireflies were running some tests on her and some others. And it turns out there are a whole lot more like you, dozens of them. But the doctors,
dozens of us.
they couldn't make any of it work. So they actually stopped looking for a cure. And that was just like, I mean, he's just feeding Ellie this lie. And yeah. as he's doing it, we flash back. Like, the audio from that lie is still going on top of him shooting Marlene,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, and you kind of knew. I mean, I felt pretty certain that he had the old gun under the hospital
yeah.
blanket. That makes – you can't – we know a lot about this guy at this point. He's got the gun in that other hand.
Yeah, he's strapped.
He's strapped up. He's not going to be caught. You know, unarmed here. So.
Right. Not after all he's
Not
gotten
after,
through.
No,
yeah.
No.
So you can tell Ellie doesn't really buy Joel's story even from the get-go.
Yep.
And Joel says, "I'm sorry," almost under his breath after Ellie rolls away, like to turn away from him in mm-hmm. the backseat of the car as she's laying there. And then we flash back to the parking garage where Marlene begs Joel for his life and he says, "You'd just come after her." And then, like, in cold blood, blows her away too. Yeah, and then Joel drives them back to Wyoming. Their car gives out about a five-hour hike from Jackson, and as they make their way on foot, Joel tells Ellie, like, all about Sarah, right? Like, how they used to hike all the time, and how Sarah probably would have liked Ellie because she's funny, and how she had a killer smile, and how that doesn't mean that Ellie doesn't have a killer smile, but this is when they were really hammering home, like, look, this man is not right in the head. He has replaced his own child with this one.
Yeah.
It is completely obscuring his vision on what would be good for the whole of humanity. But it also gets you into that question of, like, is there enough good in humanity worth saving? Which I think is where Joel falters as well. Like, I don't think it's just the selfishness. I think he's also like, I've seen enough of this world. I've seen enough other people. I do not care about them. I only care about this little girl. Like, I don't know that it's all just selfishness. But you can tell that as Joel is talking all this like Sarah smack, that Ellie is processing the unlikelihood that what he is described to her, like taking place with the Fireflies, being actually the case, right? Like, she's walking a little bit behind him, and you can kind of see on her face that she's like, oh man. She's like unpacking what has just occurred. Like,
yeah,
oh no.
And all of the Sarah talk is he's giving himself away
yeah,
a little bit,
and she's kind of reading into it, and I think it scares her a little bit.
He starts to unpack that and kind of give her some of that information. Obviously, they're openly talking about Sarah, you know, more like we can remember the time where he basically says, like, don't say another word when they're in Jackson. Now he's kind of talking about her more freely, but the fact that now he's like really opening up and talking about her personality and comparing the two of them, it is like, it's giving, like, I think the last time we saw this was Perry Mason, where, like, a mom just, like, latches onto a new baby because hers is done. And
right.
you're like,
that's not
that's,
right.
That's not your baby,
yeah.
woman.
Yeah.
It's kind of doing that whole thing.
It's like psychologically replacing
yeah.
something.
And so it that doesn't make us feel great about this, because even though, like, you know, to steal more lines from Ellie, like, we know that he's well-intentioned and that he cares and wants to protect her, and all of that is good. But, like, it has taken a dark turn here where, like, it definitely doesn't seem healthy, and he has made some incredibly awful decisions to go about doing this.
And she, to her side of the argument, has had to go through so much and become so damaged and so traumatized through all of this that it's only worth it to her if the outcome is what they set out to make it. And then, yeah, so they make it to a spot overlooking Jackson where Ellie says, hey, wait. She's like, fuck. Back in Kansas City, you asked me about the first time I killed someone. And then she explains her and Riley's story, right? How Ellie had to kill Riley, which is a thing I was wondering, would they give us this information? Would they give us a flashback? Like, how did that unfold? Because it seemed fairly obvious what would have to occur and how heartbreaking that would be. But again, Ellie's telling Joel this almost as currency. Like, look, I'm telling you this truth about me. Now you tell me the truth about what happened in Salt Lake City. And she says, swear to me that everything you said about the Fireflies is true. And everybody watching is like, come on, man, just tell her the fucking truth. Like, just tell her what happened. Just tell her the truth. And Joel says, I swear.
I swear it.
And Ellie goes, okay. Roll credits. I was shocked by the way this unfolded. I thought a lot of things were going to happen in this episode. None of them actually occurred.
Okay.
And I thought Joel was for sure a goner. Didn't think he was making it out of season one.
That's mostly what I thought.
He somehow did.
Definitely went into the finale thinking that Joel was going to die in this episode somehow.
I thought once he started shooting, he might get all the way to the surgery room. But like one of the things in the back of my mind was, oh, we haven't seen Marlene this whole time he's been shooting all these people. Mm-hmm. I thought she was going to pop out and like off him right before he got there. That didn't happen. I definitely didn't expect the season to end on such a massive cliffhanger. Well, it's where it's like we spend the whole season building this relationship up, Ellie and Joel. We go from like not being able to buy in, seeing how it's not really working, he's so closed off, to the complete and total opposite, right? Where they're like, you're rooting for this pairing. You really see the love and the bond between them and how similar they are in some ways, even some ways that aren't so good, to the point that it goes to the other end of the pendulum, like swings all the way across to where Joel is too deep and Ellie is the one that's like, I am closing myself off from this kind of now toxic and weird relationship with this man that is replacing his dead daughter with me.
Yeah.
Right.
And you see that in that final scene, right? Like she's not, we see it a little bit in the car and then especially here, I think that she kind of knows maybe like, or at least has it in her mind, like kind of not buying this. And so it's one of those moments where you're just kind of giving him the opportunity to come clean about whatever the hell happened back there. And he doesn't. And so, like, she's kind of taking him at his word, but also probably knows that he's full of shit.
Yeah, and I think you can tell she's probably not able to fully accept the lie that is being told to her.
Yeah.
And she's just sort of sitting with it still. And that becomes, like, the big question is, like, for me, I was like, wait, so now, like, what is season two going to be about?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Big news came out that they're officially confirming that part two of the video game. So this played through the end of part one. The Last of Us part one, the video game, has completely played out on screen here.
Yes.
They're taking part two and putting it into multiple seasons. So it'll be at least season two and three, right?
Yep. And it's from what I understand, it is a longer video game. Like gameplay is longer.
Yeah.
So it makes more, it does make sense to extend that second game into a couple seasons.
But it just makes me wonder what the setup is. Like, are we, we're going back to Jackson, Joel and Ellie are alive. Like clearly Tommy is going to play a bigger part in season two than he did in season one.
I thought that was, you know, some things that we did kind of read that I think were right. You know, in some ways, like we thought it was really weird that we weren't going back to Tommy and Maria, that like Jackson had played such a small role in the show.
It was like, here's a utopia and we're out.
And now it's like, okay, well, so we are kind of going back and this is going to play a little bit more into the continuation of the story.
And I mean, the biggest obvious, you know, cliffhanger is that humanity hangs in the balance, right? With the way this has been pitched to us, that Ellie is the only hope for humanity, that she is the one thing that could create a cure because of this insane happenstance with the way she was born. Well, now she's just going to be walking around in Jackson. Like, is it going to come? Is she going to fully process the lie? Is she going to figure out that Joel had a freak out, murdered everybody, and ruined humanity's one chance at longer-term survival?
I kind of think that she's going to figure that out, yeah. Like, I do think that that is going to play a role into the next season.
Is she going to seek another way to have herself turned into some kind of cure? Is somebody else in the camp going to find out what Joel did? Is Tommy going to find out? Is Maria going to find out? Like, where do we go from here? How does this all play? And I mean, since I've said this did not unfold the way I thought it would, I loved the way it was almost like a similar thing to, you know, to take it back to Game of Thrones, as we like to do, into season one with the big execution that nobody saw coming. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This was sort of like that, but without a death, right? Like, I mean, it was not one of our main characters anyway, where I was just like, wow, that was not what I expected at all.
Well, yeah, and they really cut the legs off of the mission, right? Off of what the goal was.
Yeah,
here.
We went through all that shit to get to that.
To get right. And that's what we were in search of. That's what we were seeking, is like this opportunity to potentially restore humanity and you know, and get rid of the pandemic and the disease. And we basically just like went back to zero on that. Like, we are completely back at square one. We don't even know if there's another brain surgeon alive. Like, obviously Joel's not going to let this happen one way, anyway.
Yeah.
So it leaves a lot to sort through and figure out. And I'm with you. I very curious to see where the story goes for season two.
Yeah, and if Joel becomes like sort of a villainous character, because if there was never, if there was no coming back from where he was before, right, which was the big question, like he's done so much, he's a broken man. Can Ellie avoid becoming like him? Well, look what he did this episode, man. He got 30 more bodies on his count here and, you know, took out the world's only living brain surgeon and like destroyed this entire chance for humanity in one fell swoop because he couldn't handle the way that Marlene's dumbass set it up all for him, set it up for him. So I'm just curious, like, how that plays out longer term as well. Obviously, Barrett and I will be further discussing all of this on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles later in the week, diving into what we think could happen in season two, answering hotline calls from our bloater brigade tier on Patreon, and further digesting and dissecting this episode. But I thought it was phenomenally well done, man. This was a very, very good cap on the end of a surprisingly good season of television to me.
Yeah. How did you feel? I know we had some gamer buddies of ours talking a little bit about the pacing, and this was a very short episode for a finale. Do you think that it would have benefited from going the opposite direction, which a lot of shows do,
and like
giving us a longer finale and like trying to maybe insert some things that just kind of elongated the process a little bit?
I mean, I thought it played out pretty perfectly. The pacing made me very anxious, and it made it even more intense. I mean, I haven't played out this part of the video game, so I don't know exactly how it goes, and I could see how it could insert some level of argument from the gamers there. But, like, look, they went long with the series premiere.
Right.
And I thought they were doing the same thing with the finale. I don't know where I got that information from, but I had heard, like, season finale is going to be, like, an hour and a half, and it was half of that.
Yeah.
So I always try when I start an episode to not see the minute count on the bar at the bottom, because it gives you like a little bit of information about how far along you are. Right. Yeah. And I saw it when I hit play and I was like, what the hell? Like, how are they going to wrap this up that quickly? And then when they started off with the cold open, I was even more shocked that it was going to be this short, because we were taking up all this time with the birth of Ellie. And so that was pretty shocking to me. I was surprised. I'm curious to hear. They didn't get into the argument of why they went short in the after the episode. I'm curious to hear Craig Mazin and Neil Druckmann's takes on why they chose to go that direction.
So I will, one of the things that I did read, I think in that same article that I mentioned, was that in a Neil Druckmann approved cinematic playout of the game, you can go and find this, I think. It's like a 7-hour, you watch the game cinematically. Like, you're not playing it. It's like, it's basically the video game movie version of the game.
Okay.
This scene takes like 43 minutes or something like that. This kind of like end part. And that's almost exactly what the episode was as well. So they really stayed faithful to this kind of like the way this plays out without you having to play and make your way through the hospital and do the game yourself. But in like, you know, just in the cutscene and cinematic play out, this is how it all unfolds. And I kind of liked the conciseness, shocker, I know, coming from me. But I just, we had reached this point, right? We had seen the buildup of the trauma. We had seen the connection grow. And I was totally fine with them putting the bow on it in a tight 45 minutes, because it's so much to unpack. And the decision that Marlene makes, which leads to the decision that Joel makes, the decision that Ellie is not given, it's all part of like this big like moral question that we're given and handed and left to deal with as we wait for the future season. And so I thought, I agree with you. I thought it was really well done, and I had no issues with the timing, and man, heck of a finale. I'm excited to hear what the Bloater Brigade has to say.
It's hard to set up a moral clusterfuck where I don't feel like either side is right.
Yeah.
And that's what they've done here, and that's what I love about it. And as Craig Mazin said in the after the episode, it was the reason he was so keen on creating this as a TV show, because he loved the way that game left you dealing with all these questions and the two factions and arguing with each other and all that. I just had no idea. I'll say this for all the things that like the internet spoils for you along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Bravo to the gaming community for not having this get wrecked for us, man, because there were like certain things that I did get spoiled for me. But somehow this ending to game one, to part one, to this first season was completely unscathed in my head, and I'm very appreciative of that. So thank you. And also, just as a reminder, when you're watching television that has pre-existing source material, stay the fuck out of the comments on social media. Just stay out of there, man. Just don't go. It's not worth it. Remind yourself. Put a sign up in your bathroom, whatever you need to do to remind yourself. You cannot go into the comments section. Some asshole is definitely in there discussing how this entire thing ends. I promise you. But yeah, Barrett and I will be back Thursday, patreon.com/oystersclamscockles to support the show and get those ad-free, exclusive, continued conversations driven by hotline calls from the Bloater Brigade, where we further dissect and discuss every episode of The Last of Us. And this Thursday's will be a big one. Cannot wait. Make sure you get your calls in if you're in the Bloater Brigade. Follow Barrett at Barrett Dudley on Twitter and Instagram. Follow me at WR Bolin. Follow our show at Oysters, Clams, and Cockles on TikTok, at Oysters, Clams, Cockles on Instagram, and at Clams and Cockles on Twitter. Go to bolinmedia.com/shop to get yourself some merch. Succession starts March 26th?
Something like that.
Not this upcoming Sunday,
but
one after that.
But the one after that. Stay locked in, subscribed. This podcast does not go away when a show goes away. We are right here covering the next thing, which
in this case
will be Succession.
Succession's final season.
And there's never been a better time to... I mean, I know everybody listening right now, I know you need more of this. I know you need more of this conversation. So go join us on Patreon. Get one more episode to digest this whole Last of Us season and hear some good calls from the Bloater Brigade.
And if you're a big Succession fan, stick around in there for us throughout Succession. We'll be doing hotline calls as well. We appreciate y'all. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for supporting the show and supporting our sponsors all season long. It means a lot. That's how we keep this whole thing going. And yeah, until next time, Clam Fam, if you're lost in the darkness, look for the light.